They were images broadcast around the world. For a time, they were the lead global story on the BBC. I'm talking about the policing of the protests in Sydney around the visit of the Israeli President Isaac Herzog. One protester was punched 18 times. A group of Muslim men kneeling in prayer outside Sydney Town Hall was dragged away. There were those images of a protester with his hands up being dragged onto the floor and then punched on the floor. The day after, the police announced 9 people had been charged with a range of offences, including allegedly assaulting officers. And the New South Wales Premier, Chris Minns, defended the police response.
New South Wales Police had to keep both protesters and mourners separate so that, as disturbing as the scenes were last night on the news, they weren't even worse as a result of thousands of people clashing together on the streets of Sydney. I understand that there's been criticisms of New South Wales Police. I just want to make it clear, they were caught in an impossible situation. They did their job by keeping those groups separate, and we want to thank them for their service to the people of New South Wales. It is a difficult, combustible situation.
But did the strict new anti-protest laws add to the impossibility of that situation? I've been speaking to Associate Professor Vicky Senters from the University of New South Wales, an expert in police powers and police accountability, and Dr. Vincent Hurley, a former New South Wales police officer and a criminologist at Macquarie University. We spoke just as the police watchdog, the Law Enforcement Conduct Commission, announced it would investigate the actions of officers and the New South Wales Police more broadly, following a significant number of complaints.
I'm not surprised the Law Enforcement Conduct Commission has called for an inquiry, and I think it's good that they're actually calling for an inquiry because it would go to clear the air and maybe set up some more standards or principles or ideas on how better to police large events like this. So I think that that's a good thing. When I was spoken to about this earlier this week, I had a good degree of reservations over a number of clips because I hadn't seen the full clips. And I said, you know, in some circumstances, as it appeared that X, Y, and Z had happened. But certainly the gentleman and the police officer with the bike and the white shirt, it appears that the police officer started hitting him for no valid reason in the absence of any hearing any language or that was discussed at the time. So that appears to be totally unjustified. But overall, and it's sad to say that I expected there to be violence. It's a terrible thing to say, but I wasn't surprised.
Vicky, the police watchdog, the Law Enforcement Conduct Commission, will now investigate. Your reaction to that and your reaction to what you saw in that protest on Monday night?
Yeah, thanks. Look, I really welcome that the Law Enforcement Conduct Commission conducting an inquiry. And there's a pretty high threshold for the LEC, as we call it, to investigate police misconduct. It's got to rise to the level of serious misconduct, which absolutely police have a really basic legal duty to use reasonable force. But I'm concerned that this is not in isolation. I mean, there's a history of New South Wales Police unlawfully engaging in excessive force in protests. So I really welcome the LEC investigation. I agree with Vincent that the footage in relation to one man at least, there appears to be no justification for the level of violence used against him. And more broadly, there are reports of capsicum spray being sprayed directly into people's faces. Now, that's just simply punishment. And the police force manual is clear. You can't use force for the purposes of punishment. It's got to be for a legitimate reason. It's got to be proportionate and responding to some kind of direct and actual threat, which we didn't see in these protests.
Vincent, policing is a difficult job. You said there before that you anticipated trouble. I dare say there were some officers that anticipated trouble as well. How does that impact your mindset as you go into this? Do you sort of get psyched up? Does your judgment get, you know, possibly impaired by that sense that there might be trouble?
I think there's a couple of things that played into this. You know, in the week before, you had politicians and other people setting the scene that, you know, there was going to be zero tolerance or there was going to be some degree of, you know, threat. That even before the police would actually sit down and work out a strategy as to how to address it would not help the situation at all. But I think from a policing perspective, police, one of the primary things they worry about is their officer survival, their own, they call it officer survival, their training on how to keep themselves safe in a volatile situation. So the gentleman laying down on the tram tracks that we saw the police punch him in the kidneys quite a few times.
18 times.
18 times, yeah. I've received so much hate emails this week from members of the public, and look, because I said that the police would have had in the back of their mind prior to this what happened at WA, that some random individual could have thrown a pipe bomb into the crowd. The police would have wanted to know what that individual man had in his hand. Now, it's okay in retrospect to say, well, the police should have done this or the police should have done that. But at that time, if I was a police officer there and I asked a man or tried to force a man's hand out from under him because I didn't know what he had, then, of course, I would be using force to do that.
Vicky, Vincent makes an important point there. I mean, this process didn't happen in isolation, did it? I mean, we had that Invasion Day rally on Australia Day in Perth, an attempted bomb attack. We obviously had the terrorist attack at Bondi. A lot of the New South Wales police officers would have been involved in that. I wonder how that plays in to the policing, you know, and it makes their job even more difficult because there is that sense of heightened alert.
Yeah, look, absolutely. I don't deny it's a really difficult environment. And, you know, when we have real terrorist incidents, clearly the police are on alert. But I have to say that the fact that this was a peaceful protest and the nature and extent of scuffles, the Premier called it a riot. I think we need to look at the factual evidence, which, you know, will come out with the LEC investigation, that this was largely a peaceful protest. Part of the issue is how politically the role of kind of government, politicians, how they stigmatise protest as a whole as being violent in advance against the factual evidence and how that stirs up and creates an authorising environment for police where they're put in a difficult position and they end up kind of breaking some of the basics around the law. So I'm just concerned around the politicisation of protest and what this does to police culture and creates an environment where policing becomes more volatile and it doesn't necessarily relate to a factual assessment of what's going on in front.
On ABC Radio National, I'm Nick Bryant and this is Saturday Extra and I'm speaking with Associate Professor Vicky Centers from the University of New South Wales and Dr. Vincent Hurley, a former New South Wales police officer and a lecturer now at Macquarie University. Vince, a question for you. Police are now being told to enforce much stricter protest laws. I wonder whether they have been put in an invidious situation here. I mean, an easy way to have sort of de-stressed that situation would have been to allow those protesters to march, which is what they wanted to do. The new laws do not allow for that. I wonder what you're hearing from former colleagues within the force, whether they think these protest laws are kind of becoming almost unpoliceable.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of concern within the police or the police that I know and ex-police, and they see a lot of laws being made to police public behaviour and speech, and they see those laws as actually fracturing society. So more laws are not necessarily better laws or make society a better place. More laws are not necessarily the answer. Tolerance is the answer.
And Vicky, I'm fascinated by the sort of history of these laws. I remember when I first came to Australia, I was covering the APEC summit in 2007. It was a controversial visit by George W. Bush at that time. It was the end of the Howard years. I was surprised back then how strict the anti-protest laws were compared to, say, the United States, where I'd sort of reported from before. They have become a lot stricter since then. I wonder whether you could just briefly talk us through how these anti-protest laws have evolved over the last 20 years because they do seem to be getting stricter and stricter.
Yes, Nick, I think that's right. And I think it's fair to say that New South Wales has the invidious reputation of having some of the most repressive and draconian anti-protest laws in the country and perhaps even internationally. And look, we'd be here all day if we, you know, went through the history, but I do think that particularly over the last 15, 20 years, there's been an erosion of the right to protest. And in a nutshell, there's kind of three main ways that's happened with multiple laws. And the first is the expanded move-on powers for police. So 20 years ago, it was accepted that police couldn't move on protesters except if they were obstructing traffic. Like, that was a given. And that's really shifted with successive laws. It's been watered down, so police have a really broad discretion to move on based on their own discretion, like if they think there's safety issues. And it's eroded even more with the recent major events designation, which happened for the first time on Monday. And you mentioned, you know, previous designations in the past, but that law is now incredibly expansive and quite worrying. And the second way is we're seeing the criminalisation of protests through more and more offences and increased penalties for locking onto buildings, new aggravated offences to trespass, with really hefty imprisonment maximums. And the third pattern is a way that government is now directly restricting when and where protests can be held. And we've seen that escalate most recently. And I'm concerned that this is really emptying out a basic democratic right that we have.
I wonder whether you've sort of got a sense of where this kind of policing fits within a sort of global context in established democracies.
Yeah, it's a really important question, Nick. I think we need to be careful to look at Australian policing in its own local context, in its colonial context. Violence is an enduring feature of the institution of the police. It's only the police who have a monopoly on state-authorised violence. And these kinds of issues have been kind of recurring in Australia's history, so they're not new. So I think we need to keep an eye on what's happening globally with repressive increase in authoritarian states and anti-democratic approaches and ensuring that policing doesn't follow suit. But I think we need to look at the environment within Australia and how that tendency's always been there, and this isn't happening in isolation.
And Vince, just as we've asked the question whether policing is getting more aggressive, do you get the sense too that protests are getting more aggressive? And I'm talking generally here rather than about the specifics of what happened in Sydney on Monday.
Yeah, I think they are generally, because people are becoming more wedded to their beliefs of what they're protesting about. And I think that because people are becoming more wedded to their views, they're not willing to even entertain the thought that there is another perspective.
Vicky, I know it's hard to talk in sort of generalities. I mean, this discussion needs to take place in a sort of very case-by-case forensic way. But the idea that in some instances demonstrators are getting more provocative in their tactics, I'm thinking of groups maybe like Extinction Rebellion?
Yeah, look, it's an interesting question. I don't think that demonstrators are becoming more aggressive when we look at a longer historical time. Now, if we think about the suffragettes several centuries ago in the UK and elsewhere, we're using tactics that today might be called terrorism. But there is a tradition of peaceful civil disobedience. You know, people may not like it, but it has a place when there's really extreme things happening, like serious climate change. And I guess the question for lawmakers and the police is about balancing that right for peaceful civil disobedience, which certainly, you know, I think has a place in democratic society. And so obviously, you know, when there's threats to community safety, that's when that line is crossed. But this is a well-trodden debate, and I would caution us about thinking that, you know, there's a sudden rise in violent protests, because I don't think that's the case. I would ask us to really look critically at what is the role of government and the police in facilitating safe protest. There's a lot of discussion around the protests on Monday described by the Premier as a riot. Now, I don't think that's factually correct, but certainly if the previous system of, which worked quite well, of notification and authorization of protest was kept in place, rather than creating tensions, I think we might be looking at the question in a different way.
Associate Professor Vicky Sentis from the University of New South Wales and Dr. Vincent Hurley, a former New South Wales police officer and now a lecturer at Macquarie University. Thanks so much for joining us on Saturday Extra.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks very much, Vicky.
Thanks, Nick. Thanks, Vincent.
Stream any ABC radio station live and on the go. Discover new podcasts, music, and audiobooks, all free on the ABC Listen app.